When the rules of society are broken, things can get a little wild. This is Wild Society.
Hi everyone, I'm Courtney.
I'm Chad.
I'm Bethany.
And I'm Jordan.
We are a true crime comedy podcast. Each week we discuss a murder case followed by a true story in the realm of the wild and bizarre. Welcome to Wild Society.
Hey everybody.
Hey guys.
We are live today from Saskatchewan, Saskatchewan.
We wish.
We wish. That was from Brittany.
We had a town of the week request. She wanted to see if Chad could say.
We haven't had a town of the week in months, I feel like.
Bringing it back. Thanks,
Brittany. So, Brittany, thanks for the request. I think I said it right when we were
I think you were pretty close.
And then I just
I was
it.
Hoping that you wouldn't get it right, but
is that I feel like it's a fishing community.
Oh,
let's just call it a fishing community.
I don't know.
I feel like they have
it's probably
pike.
Totally landlocked.
I should know that, but I don't.
Let's just pretend they have pike and there's some nice whales pike. Going up and down.
Whales. Nice whales.
The coast.
Sure.
It's a coastal town now. I'm not sure.
Okay.
It's probably in the desert.
No. The desert in Canada.
Canadian desert. They're famous for their deserts.
So last week I mentioned the McDonald triad and I found out what the third element was. I was wrong. So basically, it's three signs that can indicate if someone will grow up to be a serial killer or a violent criminal. So the three signs are animal cruelty, setting fires, and bedwetting.
Jordan wet his bed last night.
Yeah.
You two are a match made in heaven.
Yeah.
I really didn't.
It was like waking up in a pool.
Ew.
No, he didn't. It was Thursday.
That was Thursday.
Actually, it was Tuesday.
Yeah, I remember you said that because I didn't know the fire thing.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify.
And I thought you were talking about milkshakes and fries and a burger.
Yes, McDonald's.
My milkshake brings all the boys to
the house. Ooh, God, I love McDonald's.
That's my favorite TikTok video I did.
Oh, me too. Yeah. Me too. That's my favorite one.
What is your TikTok name, Jordan? Is there names? I haven't really used TikTok.
I think it's JROSSN, but I haven't been on in a long time. I haven't made a video in months.
Early in quarantine, that was like pretty much all Jordan did was make videos. And I was working from home, so there were so many times I'd have to shut the door to the office because all I would hear is the same 5-second video clip playing over because he was trying to memorize what people were saying.
I was bored.
Yeah.
Speaking of funny videos, I have an interesting story. I was in Tulsa a little over a week ago doing some research for an upcoming episode on the Tulsa Race Massacre, meeting with people up there. And anyway, it was super bad weather. I was by myself, so I was stuck in this hotel room. And there was a marathon of the show before the 90 days.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah,
90 Day Fiancé.
Yeah, 90 Day Fiancé before the 90 days.
Yeah, so I've never watched that, but it totally just sucked me in instantly. So there's a couple on there. I guess they're the first bisexual couple to ever be on the show. So it's two girls and Stephanie and Erica.
Oh, God.
What?
There's two girls and they have one cup.
What does that mean?
Oh, my gosh. No.
Stuff of nightmares.
No, it's a horrible video.
Don't Google it on your work computers.
Oh. I cannot believe you've never heard of that.
No.
You don't need to know.
No. Okay.
Yeah, don't. Unknow that if you know it.
Unknow that. Anyway, I thought their story was really, it just caught my interest. I got fascinated with it. So I got on Instagram. I started following Stephanie, one of the girls. And so she followed me back and we've been messaging a little bit. On the show, she seems like very much like me. Slow at things, very like responsible. I don't know what the right word
is.
Like an old
you?
Soul, almost.
An old
yeah.
soul, sure.
But behind the scenes.
Well, no. So I was looking through her Instagram, and I guess she has like a Patreon, and she's on OnlyFans, which I didn't even know what OnlyFans was.
Well, Two Girls, One Cup is kind of around the same path.
Oh, no. Really?
No, Dorinda Medley from The Housewives and Sonya have an OnlyFans.
They do?
Yeah, but I don't think they get naked on it.
Okay.
I think it's just like boudoir type pictures.
I pulled up OnlyFans because I was like, what is this? I don't even know what this is. And I don't know if it's because I'm a photographer or what, but the suggestions it was showing me were photographers selling like lessons and videos. So I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. It's like a, I don't know, like a informational resource that you can subscribe to.
Oh, yeah. There's some resources on there.
Anyway,
it goes back to our fluffer conversation from a couple months ago.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, so then I find, you know, Stephanie's and it's 18 and up material. But her vlogs I've been watching and they are hysterical. Like this girl, she's cracking me up. She has made these songs and she has compiled all of these creepy ass messages that pervs have sent her into songs.
Okay, that was some Grammy Award winning shit right there. She's super funny.
Oh my God, I love her.
It's Come on, baby, sit on my face and poo.
I can't, I'm dying. Hey. How does she keep a straight face?
Because you've been running in my mind all day.
I love just using the hey as the chorus, like, hey.
It's fantastic.
Hey.
It's so fantastic.
Like, what a great pickup line. Hey. Wow, real original, buddy.
I'm going to be singing that in my head while y'all are talking.
It's literally stuck in my head.
Her and I could be best friends.
Oh, yeah.
She sings about whole day, and I like later days.
Oh, hey.
Later days.
Everybody go follow Stephanie Matto. Her Instagram is at Stepanka Matto, M-A-T-T-O.
I always get mad when people are that funny and talented.
I'm a little jealous.
Yeah, for sure.
But maybe we can
just
be friends.
And she's gorge at the same time.
She's stunning.
Stupid. It's stupid.
Totally stunning.
Wait. I have a question. What are you all messaging
about?
Yeah,
I am like so jealous because I am a religious 90-day watcher. I watch all of the seasons. I've watched all the seasons. I'm caught up.
I've never even watched the show.
I'm obsessed. I think it's great. Even Ben loves it. And so I am freaking out right now. Like, what?
Yeah, what are you messaging
about? I was just really taken with their story. And so I just messaged her. And I know she got a lot of shit from... I didn't even watch all of the episodes. I just saw, I guess, the few that they're in heavily.
They didn't really portray her in a very good light.
They really didn't. Because I loved her at first. And then I could see where they were taking it. But I still agreed with her on everything. Like, mm-hmm. I felt like I was still on her side, even when they were trying to make her look bad. Anyway... Yeah, I'm a very, like, I want to send the love kind of person.
Yeah.
So I just, like, messaged her and was like, hey, I love your story.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
You keep doing you. Anyway, go look at her videos because I haven't laughed so hard in a really long time. And it's very interesting for someone to have such a multifaceted personality.
Yeah.
Which I love.
My mom is going to be so... That's her favorite show. Remember the time she talked to me for 30 minutes on the phone about 90 Day
Fiancé? Oh, my God. I need to call your mom.
30 minutes?
Here's the premise of it. And she went in and at one point, I think I just had the phone on the table and I was like cleaning up and she just was going on and on.
You just have it on speaker?
Yeah.
It was 90 minutes for 90 days.
Yeah.
So it was a minute for every day.
Yes.
Yeah. I'd never watched it before, but...
It's so good, y'all. You need to watch it. Seriously. Like this season... if y'all are watching this season, y'all tell me your opinions because I don't know. There's a few couples and I'm like, don't think they're going to make it.
She made another video where she covered. So there's this guy on the show, Usman. He's like a
Soja boy.
He's like a famous person in Nigeria.
Yes.
A like rapper, musician.
And he's on the show.
And
Soja boy.
He writes the song for his girl. He calls her baby girl, Lisa.
Baby girl, Lisa.
Anyway, Stephanie has done like an acoustic cover of Baby Girl Lisa.
No.
And it's actually sounds really awesome.
She's got a good voice and everything.
Yeah, she is. No, she's hilarious. I'm like, girl, you need to be a we should have her on the show.
Stephanie, please come on our show.
Yeah,
tell us your story.
I would love to meet her.
Oh, same.
So I was flipping through the channels last night because I couldn't find anything to watch. And I stumbled upon the show called Sex Sent Me to the ER.
Oh,
I've heard of that.
It's a real popcorn muncher.
Wow.
Yeah.
And a something else muncher.
I knew that was coming. I was waiting for it.
You were looking right at me.
I knew it was coming.
This man and wife have like a very sexual sex life. The wife is in the kitchen and she starts reading this magazine and she stumbles upon this article that's talking about a vajayshul.
I'm sorry, what?
So basically, you're steam cleaning your vajay.
Oh, I've heard
you're
of
giving
those.
Your vagina a facial. So anyway, there's a you
it's probably a smart thing to do.
There's a certain
I think the Kardashians did that on probably. One episode.
It's not a smart thing to do.
It's not?
No.
Not probably not at home.
No. She gives herself this makeshift facial. So she gets like this little stovetop grill,
oh,
puts it
my
on
gosh.
The ground.
What?
And then puts like this big crab boil looking pot on top no. so to boil the water.
No.
So she squats down over it. She's cleaning her hooch. And then there's like a concoction of stuff you're supposed to rub down there.
Whoa.
And she doesn't have everything. So she kind of gets like, it's like honey and an egg and lotion and something. Uh-uh. Her husband walks in and catches her doing this. So she's mortified already, yeah. but she's like, oh, well, you see me. So hand me the concoction. So the husband puts it down there for her.
Oh, gosh.
Well, it starts burning like profusely.
Oh, my gosh.
And so she's freaking out. They end up having to go to the ER. Nothing's helping. And then the husband's like, I think I know what caused it. Earlier, I made some chili in that pot with habanero peppers.
Holy shit.
And
no way.
I must not have cleaned it very, very good.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So what happens was habanero peppers, water doesn't wash them away good enough. So when he cleaned it with water, it didn't wash it all away. So she had to end up having to take a milk bath.
Oh my gosh, yeah, for the heat.
For the heat.
It's like when you eat a spicy pepper, you're supposed to drink milk.
Detergent for the peppers. So they literally had to go get milk from the hospital cafeteria, fill up this big tub, and she had to soak in it.
Oh, wow.
I'm mortified.
Yeah.
Now, was it 2% or will any milk work? Does it have to vitamin D?
Almond.
I don't know.
Whole
oat milk.
Milk.
I don't know.
You would think it would need to be the vitamin D, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, ha, 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 Chad.
I like when Courtney doesn't get it right away. And she goes, ha, ha. And then it dawns on her.
Make sure you have your ducks in a row before you
get
a vajacial.
Why would she go to the, like, I thought you were going to say she just turned the shower on and, like, steamed up the bathroom. Not
No,
you have to, you're supposed to, like, sit on it.
Sit on
like,
the pot of boiling water?
That's not
squat
at all
above
how.
It.
You're supposed to like squat and like cover yourself so it's like stays in there. I'm pretty sure the Kardashians did it on one episode.
That's something you go to a spa for.
It was like, yeah, someone brought
that's
it to their house.
That's not to do a DIY.
No.
Okay.
Right.
I don't want to walk in and see my wife looking like she's trying to
wait, you
the
have
crab
a wife?
Oil.
When this happened? The crab oil. By the way, at the end, the doctor tells her, like, you don't need to do that. Your vajay takes care of itself. In regard to that, like,
okay.
You're good.
Okay, so medical advice.
If you're listening, don't do that.
Don't try this at home.
So this last week on Discovery Plus, they did a special on the Cecil Hotel in LA, which Jordan did a wild story over. So it's called Ghost Adventures is the name of the show, which I wasn't totally in love with the people.
They're not
exactly.
My favorite.
Yeah.
And I'm not like a ghost show connoisseur or anything, but they seemed a little sensational.
They're my number three on that network alone. There's two other ones I love on that network.
I was like I was disappointed when I found out it was them, but,
yeah.
but they did a really good job.
Yeah. As it got going, it was really interesting and really messed up.
It got carried away near the end.
Yeah. It gets really intense. They have that same stick person machine that was on
it looks like this
that Jack Osborne
uses.
I'm glad I didn't watch it with you guys.
And there's like they're the only people that have ever been allowed to do ghost investigations there. But can you imagine though how much money they make if they allowed ghost tours or something?
That should be their market. I mean they should quit trying to fight it.
I would
just
do
be
it
the
in
ghost
two
hotel
seconds.
You know.
At one point, Courtney, because I know you don't want to hear this, the woman who gets found in the water tank. Spirit says her name. Like,
no.
It's her.
Clear as day.
Yeah, through the ghost box talking thing.
Oh my gosh. No.
Like Elisa
I would
Lamb.
Have freaked out.
And they end up talking
the whole name?
The whole name.
The whole name.
Yeah.
In a female voice.
No.
Yeah.
They end up talking to which serial killer?
Jack Underweger from Austria.
The other one.
Oh, Richard Ramirez.
Richard Ramirez, yeah.
It's really nuts.
I have chills.
They bring his drawings, Richard Ramirez's real drawings into the hotel.
Yeah. Well, that's just asking for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'd actually be interested, especially since we've done a story on it.
It
also,
starts out
you
slow.
Used to live there. It does
slow,
ease
but it
in.
Gets, Yeah, he's in just like fans only.
Fans only. It's only fans.
Only fans.
Sorry.
Get it right, Chad.
Oh my gosh.
I have a feeling Bethany has an account on it.
Probably. We just don't know about it. We know she's a closet freak.
That's my secret 10% of my personality. Also, we watched Silence of the Lambs after we watched that. So
did
I finally
you really?
Saw it. Yeah. It's not scary. You should watch it.
I told you it's not scary.
It's like a thrillery. It's good.
But does it make you jump?
No.
No.
Okay.
No,
it's really just like a true crime.
It's a crime story. Yeah.
Okay.
So now I'm mad at myself for not watching it for what, like 15 plus years?
Yeah. Amazing characters.
It was good. And now I want to watch Hannibal.
Hannibal. It's so good.
The next one, I guess. It's the next one in line.
I'll think about it.
I actually like Hannibal better.
No.
Oh. I do.
Wrong.
Fight.
I love it.
No, it's good though. It's good for a sequel or whatever it's supposed to be.
We don't want
to
see them fight. They'd probably start like taking their clothes off and stuff.
To create their own OnlyFans.
You get to know Hannibal Lecter better.
We should have a Wild Society OnlyFans.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
You do. You get to find out that Hannibal is a Pisces.
I'm sitting here with the mic in front of my thing. And like
your thing.
Oh my gosh.
You just call your thing a thing?
Well, keeping it PG-13.
I mean, Bethany does have some nice big titties. She could probably.
Oh my God. The girl in Sex sent me to the ER that burnt her hoo-ha. She called her vagina a Lady Jane.
Oh, Lady Jane? Yeah. I haven't heard that
one.
I
thought she said Lady J.
Lady Jane.
Jane? Oh, yeah. My God. That's funny. I was half paying attention. I really wasn't paying attention.
That's really funny.
Okay, we do have to talk about what happened on the 6th in D.C. because we are a true crime podcast.
We are.
And what happened in D.C. was maybe the biggest true crime story of our lifetimes. I think so, for sure. And because we have listeners in at least 55 other countries outside the U.S., I want people to know that that is not who most of us are.
Oh my gosh.
No.
In this country. Yeah. So obviously now we know that the what happened was deadly. 5 people have now died, including a police officer. Mm-hmm. It was disturbing. It was depressing as we kind of watched helplessly for wherever we were at.
Yeah.
But it could have actually been worse because they found pipe bombs that they had to detonate. People had zip ties going into the Capitol. And if you don't know, which you probably do, we're talking about what happened on January 6th, where people stormed the Capitol trying to overturn
our nation's Capitol.
Yeah, Joe Biden's victory.
They had what?
Zip ties.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Zip ties or zip lines?
Zip ties. Like the police zip tie handcuffs.
Oh,
they were going to try to.
They were like going to take people hostage potentially.
Yeah.
Oh.
The Senate and House members had already been evacuated.
And they were also, people were going to try to hang Mike Pence because he was not.
Are you serious?
Yeah, because he wasn't going to follow through with Trump's order to try to overturn. So they were just going to attack everybody who was in there. And it was the first time since 1812 that the Capitol had been invaded like that. Unfortunately, it was, you know, this time it was the commander in chief who was kind of inciting it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first time a Confederate flag had ever flown in our Capitol.
Yeah, not even during the Civil War did the Confederate flag make it into our nation's Capitol. And yet, 2021, 6 days in.
Yeah, here we are. The FBI's already made arrests. They've been asking for the public's help in identifying people. The good news is some of these idiots were literally looking into cameras, smiling as they're carrying,
taking selfies.
Yes. So
streaming it on their social media. Like what?
Yeah. People are already being arrested. The FBI is still looking into it. Mayor David Holt of Oklahoma City, a couple days before this, wrote a really great article. And he said, part of leadership is telling your supporters the hard truth. And he said, the hard truth is Donald Trump lost and he lost big time. And we need to start talking about the truth of that. And that is what led to this, mm-hmm. is that these people were kind of almost brainwashed into thinking that the election didn't go the way that it did. So shout out to leaders like David Holt, our mayor here, who has been trying to speak the truth to that.
Yeah. And if you haven't gathered from previous episodes, I come from a very conservative background. My family is very involved in conservative politics. So I'm a little bit of the starting a new thing for a new generation of my family. Not everyone in my family, but anyway, I wanted to dispel the myth that's kind of going around and really being passed around. I've seen it I've been told it from several people, even in my own family, which is very disheartening. But the FBI assistant director, Stephen D'Antuono,
Nailed it.
On Friday, he said that there's no indication that Antifa played any role in the storming of the Capitol, not straight from the FBI. So,
yeah, for sure. I mean, to believe that, you have to believe these people were like actors or something who for the last 3 years have been posting crazy shit on their Facebook and Twitter because they literally a record of this for the last 3 years.
It's very conspiracy theory scary-ish. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
It was really devastating to me to see people protest in the name of patriotism, truly believing that they are patriots, or even in the name of Jesus. There was lots of people with flags saying, Jesus, I'm sorry. You know, this might not be a popular thing in the world today, but I do believe in Jesus, and that is not.
Oh my God. No. Are you kidding me?
I do know that these are a group of people that are fanatical. And I know they don't represent all Republicans out there.
No, they don't. They don't.
I don't want Republicans to think that we think that.
No. In every party, there is an extreme.
Exactly.
Well, and Mitt Romney has been a big leader on this. He's been preaching this for months that he was the only one to vote to convict him after impeachment, saying that this thing is over. Like, this election was over. It wasn't even close. And that the thing I don't understand, too, is there will be another Republican to become president. Like, well, don't pin your hopes on Trump. Oh, you know what I mean?
No,
like, move
real.
On. There's going to be a smarter, better Republican out there eventually.
Right.
Like, move on.
To do the right things.
Yeah. Well, I was watching it because there was a lot of people thinking, well, where are the police? Where are the police? I think we found out later that Trump did not approve the National Guard to show up. It was Pence later who was like, F this, and he approved it. But, and I know I'm not alone in this, everyone was thinking, okay, if these were black people or Arabic people,
or really any people of color,
or any person of color storming the Capitol, it would have ended a lot differently, and it would have ended with a lot more bodies.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree.
You know, Trump, he had said that when the looting starts, the shooting starts.
That was from the summer.
Black people had a reason to be protesting.
Oh, yeah.
And these idiots, and they are idiots, stormed the Capitol, looted the Capitol. I watched as they broke windows live on TV, and it was all you heard, please go home, you're special, I love you.
From the president.
Love you. Like, disgusting.
Yeah.
Because they lost an election.
Yeah.
By a lot.
The
by
difference
a lot.
Is very clear in how things are handled in our country. Not even, I mean, across the world, but especially in our country.
100%. Leaders step up.
Yes. You know? So I read something today that Lizzo wrote, actually, on her Instagram.
Love her.
I know.
Did
I
she play her
too.
Flute while doing it?
She should. She said, quote, white supremacy and democracy cannot both exist in the same space. You have to choose a side. And that really struck me. It really hit it home for me because, you know, what we're seeing is not new. It is not shocking because there has always been a divide in our country. The moment white people started thinking they could own black people, there was a divide. So to the white people listening, and this may cost us some listeners, but I don't care. White people, if you are not showing up, if you are not actively taking action to demand justice and change that would lead to unity, then you are part of the problem. I know a lot of people are thinking, well, maybe my ancestors did those things in the past, but today I don't see color, or I'm not a white supremacist. That's not enough. That is part of the problem. You should be building relationships with people who have a different history than your own. You should be recognizing our differences and listening and having conversations to better understand and have empathy for what the Black community has gone through and is still going through to this day. Ask yourself what actions you are taking to dismantle our white supremacist history. Reconciliation doesn't just magically happen, suddenly appear, or come with time. It is reached through relationships, conversation, respect, and action. So we would like to encourage you to look into different groups within your local communities because this really is a grassroots thing. You have to, you know, get involved within your community, make a change locally to make a change on the broader scale.
I don't think people know really where our audiences come from, so I'm just kind of a quick background. Our largest audience is Dallas. Our number two audience is Oklahoma City, where we record. And number three, for some reason, is Atlanta, which
Hey, Atlanta.
I only know a couple of people who live in Atlanta. I don't know very many people there.
Hotlanta.
Hotlanta, which no one there, I'm sure, says. I've been there once, loved it. I'm glad Atlanta listens. So this story takes place in Atlanta. There are several names for this case. It's probably most commonly known as the Atlanta child murder case, but I don't really believe that's accurate for the story. So once I kind of get into the meat of the story near the end, you'll probably understand why I don't really think that's an accurate name, but it's stuck. So that's what people know it as. So in the summer of 1979, Edward Teddy Hope Smith disappeared in Atlanta. 4 days later, Alfred Q. Evans also disappeared. Both boys were just 14. One vanished from a skating rink, the other while returning home from a movie. Weeks later, their bodies were found July 28th in a wooded area in the southwest part of the city. Teddy appeared to have died from a gunshot wound. Alfred appeared dead from strangulation. They are believed to be the first victims of what I'll call the Atlanta murders of 1979 to 1981. For the next 2 years, the city would be besieged by a killer or killers as 24 kids aged 7 to 17, along with 4 young adults, would also be found dead. All but 2 of the children were boys. Every victim was black. The cases would follow somewhat of a pattern. A child would disappear while participating in a normal childhood experience, and weeks, even months later, would be found dead in a river or under a bridge or behind a dumpster. The victims were strangled, shot, stabbed, or bludgeoned to death. One 10-year-old boy, Darren Glass, last seen in September 1980, has never been found. Terrified parents forbid to let their children play outside. Some parents, the ones struck by terror the most, even pulled their kids from school. City officials eventually imposed a curfew. Here's some historical perspective. In 1979, there were 269 homicides in Atlanta, the most murders in an American city at that time.
Wow, that's a lot. Wow.
I know, I didn't know that either. Many victims were poor and the most vulnerable, so there was little national attention at first. And here's a quick rundown of what leads people to finally start paying attention. The disappearance of 14-year-old Milton Harvey in September attracts little public attention. But then 9-year-old Yusuf Bell, last seen leaving a store on October 21st, goes missing, and things change largely because of his mother, Camille Bell. She talks in the media about her son as a gifted and talented student involved in many activities. She says that Yusuf would not have run away. After Yusuf is found strangled in an abandoned school in November, Camille starts the Committee to Stop Children's Murders. And here's a quote from her. "We were not a priority. For a child to be missing and for it to be important, they had to be somebody's child. How many children do we have to lose until the police department says that we have a problem?" As the disappearances and murders continued, the national media begins to cover the story. Police look to find any connection among the victims. Because every victim is black, many in the community suspect involvement from the KKK. In fact, there was talk that at least one Klansman confessed to at least one of the deaths and that the Klan promised to kill one black child a month to provoke racial unrest.
Wow.
I know.
That breaks my heart.
The accusation is that the KKK angle was covered up to keep the peace and promote Atlanta as a rising city without major racial issues. Up through the 70s, the Atlanta Police Department actually had members of the KKK in its ranks. So there was still this belief that people could be covering something up to protect the KKK for several reasons. At one point in the case, more than 100 investigators are assigned to the case as part of a multi-agency task force that included the Atlanta Police Department, Fulton County, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, and the FBI. The FBI only became involved when local law enforcement invited them. And here's some background on how the FBI gets involved into a case. There's primarily two ways the FBI gets involved into a case. The first and easiest way is if a crime is committed on federal land or if a federal statute has been violated, then FBI has jurisdiction. The other way is they have to be invited by an agency. So if somebody is shot right in front of our house right here, the FBI can't investigate unless Oklahoma City says, "We can't figure this out. We need your help."
Okay.
Special Agent in Charge, FBI Special Agent in Charge, John Glover, the first black man to lead an FBI office, continues to offer support to local law enforcement. So this is before the FBI's invited to help. He's chomping at the bit. He's like, these guys can't figure it out. We need to get involved. Before formally being invited, the FBI was running down out-of-state leads for the case. The FBI made their behavioral science unit, which is pretty much in its infancy at this point, and lab available. Basically, they're saying, we'll help any way you want without basically formally inviting our agents to help you. And it's actually the mayor of Atlanta wants the FBI agents involved to investigate because of their expertise, but the police department isn't at this point ready. And it gets so intense that the United States Attorney General, Benjamin Civiletti, orders the Justice Department to see if the FBI can get involved under the federal kidnapping statute. So how this works is oftentimes in a kidnapping, the victim will be transported over state lines. And as soon as that happens, the FBI can get involved. Now, up until this point, none of these kids have been found dead across state lines. But because a lot of kidnappings, this happens, the FBI actually goes down the path of saying, can we just take this over under the fact that we know this sometimes happens? And they decide not to because they think if Atlanta pushes back, well, we could lose this lawsuit. So let's not derail the investigation. The FBI looks into seeing if, because some of these kids are on food stamps, that because they've been murdered, is that a violation of federal law by taking away their right to federal funds, essentially. Uh-huh. And they decide that probably wouldn't muster a lawsuit either.
Okay.
In the meantime, like a steady pulse, children keep disappearing throughout the city and police kept finding their bodies, sometimes even months later, as I said earlier, tossed in dumpsters, under bridges, and behind houses. Finally, on November 6th, the FBI gets involved because of the federal kidnapping statute when the attorney general, he's had enough, he orders the FBI to get involved. Originally, Atlanta thought the FBI would basically report to them and they're like, nah, we don't do that. So they kind of learned to get involved together and they formed this task force. I thought that was interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
The FBI agents would continue to be under the supervision of Special Agent in Charge Glover. By November 1980, the FBI committed more than 24 agents and other workers to work the case full time. At this point, I want to pause. Have you all seen Mindhunter season 2?
Oh, yeah.
I was obsessed with season 2. So in the show, they kind of portray it a little bit different where the behavioral science unit are the ones who kind of kick off the FBI's investigation. It's actually Glover. So he's the one who gets the FBI involved. So it's okay. A little bit different.
Interesting.
Okay. In real life. But the behavioral science unit plays a huge role. On January 13th, 1981, FBI psychologist John Douglas, the famous profiler and probably the second most famous FBI member ever, only behind J. Edgar Hoover, plotted through the secluded wooded sites where children Alfred Evans, Edward Hope Smith, Milton Harvey, Christopher Richardson, and Earl Lee Terrell had been found. He was determined to create a profile to help catch the killer. Douglas's eventual profile was based on characteristics found to be common among the more than 25 serial and mass murderers interviewed by the Behavioral Sciences Unit based in Quantico, Virginia. Serial killers, the Behavioral Sciences Unit determined, generally have average to above average intelligence and are articulate. They closely follow media coverage of the cases, change homicidal methods to suit their needs, have frequent changes in employment, or are self-employed, and are often the only son in a family. The report also said that the serial killers of children in particular often were pampered or overprotected in their youth and may fixate on either boys or girls. Douglas advised police to use the profile he developed as a guide in evaluating suspects as they emerged into the investigation. Here's some details from the profile. It said that the suspect would be familiar with crime scenes. Quote, your offender is familiar with the crime scene areas because he is or has resided in this area. In addition, his present or past occupation caused him to drive through these areas on different occasions. The sites of the deceased are not random chance disposal areas. He realizes that these areas are remote and not frequently traveled by others. He also said that this person impersonates law enforcement. Quote, a frequent tactic to abduct street smart kids without being seen is the offenders impersonating the law enforcement official who shows concern for the victim's safety, places him into vehicles, and promises to take the victim home, which is such a dick
so
move.
Scary. Yeah.
He may conversely admonish the victim for walking the streets late at night and threaten to arrest the victim.
Wow.
Probably black. Quote, in all probability, your offender is black. Generally, offenders of this type are fixated on same race victims. The report also said that the killer would probably display aggressive behavior. Quote, your offender has, in all probability, a prior criminal history for aggressive and or assaultive behavior. He will always carry a weapon of some sort on his person and has threatened to use it on others in the past. Here's another quote. This one, to me, is bizarre. His favorite colors are black, dark blue, or brown.
What?
I know. This can be observed particularly in the clothing he selects to wear.
Oh, wow.
And the color of the car he drives.
Wow, that's so specific.
Yeah.
The profile also said that the killer would be single and fall between the ages of most likely 25 and 29.
I would love to know why those colors.
I know.
Like, how do you know that? What?
Because they're a lot smarter than all of us.
Yeah.
Criminologists
are just fascinating.
I know. At least me.
Oh, no, me too.
Bethany's would be like pink and
my
like
colors?
Blue
no.
And yellow.
Pink? Not pink. Yellow, green,
it'd be the colors of wild society.
Oh, yeah.
Bethany's profile would be like, might be a witch.
She's murdering Care Bears, y'all.
Bethany wears a lot of gray.
I wear gray and black and blue, mostly.
Yeah. Now moving on from the profile, here's a quote from Sheila Baltazar, whose stepson Patrick, 12, was killed in 1981. Every day, every night, it seemed like they were finding bodies. The city was turned upside down. There was this big, dark cloud over us, and we were just trying to hold on to our babies.
That's so sad.
I know.
Jeez.
19 children were already missing or killed by the time that Curtis Walker, a seventh grader, walked into his home one afternoon in the winter of 1981. His mother, Catherine Leach, was cooking when she turned to Curtis and forbade him from going outside. Quote, they're snatching children, she told him. 13-year-old Curtis left anyway, hoping to make extra money by carrying groceries for seniors. He never returned home.
Oh my gosh.
For 2 weeks, Leach waited for news about her second oldest of her four boys. Curtis had dreams to make it big in Hollywood. He fantasized about becoming an illustrator because he drew animals so well. Then a neighbor phoned Catherine to turn on the news. She watched in horror as police pulled her son from the water on TV.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine?
I mean, it would just be awful. You're watching us live. In the early morning hours of May 22nd, 1981, police and the FBI were staking out the South Cobb Drive Bridge over the Chattahoochee River, a site where several victims' bodies had been discovered. And remember, the FBI profile said there'd be a good chance the killer would return to a familiar spot to dump another victim. Investigators hear a splash. Shortly thereafter, a white 1970 Chevrolet station wagon driven by Wayne Williams was seen slowly driving away. It's the first vehicle that they see. Law enforcement stop the vehicle. When police ask Williams why he stopped, he said, it must be about those boys.
Oh, wow.
Williams tells police that he was on his way to check an address in a neighboring town ahead of an audition the following morning with a young singer named Cheryl Johnson. However, both the phone number he gave police for the woman and Cheryl Johnson herself turn out to be fake. Dog hair and carpet fiber in the vehicle was found. Investigators noticed gloves and a 24-inch nylon cord sitting in the passenger seat. Williams denied dropping anything into the river, but 2 days later, the body of 27-year-old Nathaniel Cater was found in the water. He had been missing for 4 days. The medical examiner ruled he probably died of asphyxia. Remember the nylon cord investigators saw in the passenger seat? They said it looked similar to ligature marks found on Cater and other victims, but the cord was never taken into evidence for analysis. Williams goes on to fail 3 polygraph tests. Co-workers told police they had seen Williams with scratches on his face and arms around the time of the murders, which investigators surmise could have been inflicted by victims during struggles. Later, Williams held a press conference outside his home to proclaim his innocence, volunteering that he had failed the polygraph tests. And of course, though, these tests are not admissible in court anyway, so it doesn't really do him any damage to just admit that he's failed these. In his mind, he probably looks like a good guy by admitting this.
Yeah.
But he also knows that in court, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Williams's question for hours on end on June 3rd and 4th, 1981 at the FBI field office and released without arrest or charge, but remained under surveillance. Adding to a growing list of suspicious circumstances, Williams had handed out flyers in predominantly black neighborhoods calling for young people ages 11 to 21 to audition for his new singing group that he had called Gemini. Eventually, hairs and fibers retrieved from the bodies of 21-year-old Jimmy Ray Payne and 27-year-old Nathaniel Cater were found to be consistent with those from Williams' home, car, and dog. Furthermore, witness Robert Henry claimed to have seen Williams holding hands and walking with Cater on the night Cater is believed to have died. On June 21st, 1981, Williams was arrested. So here's a little bit more about Wayne Williams. Wayne Bertram Williams was born on May 27th, 1958, and raised in the Dixie Hills neighborhood of Southwest Atlanta, the son of Homer and Faye Williams. Both of his parents were teachers. He graduated from Douglas High School and developed a keen interest in radio and journalism. He constructed his own Carrier Current radio station and began frequenting stations WIGO and WAOK, where he befriended a number of the announcing crew and began dabbling in becoming a pop music producer and manager. So how does this background compare to the FBI profile? Well, according to Joseph Drolet, an assistant district attorney in Fulton County who helped prosecute Williams, quote, it all fit.
Wow.
And I'm just fascinated by this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So remember, the profile said he'd be familiar with crime scenes.
Mm-hmm.
According to the task force files and doing freelance work for those TV stations in 1978, Williams shot one assignment at Red Wine Road and another at I-285 in Washington Road near Red Wine Road. The bodies of two victims were found on Red Wine, and wow, another was found nearby.
Wow.
That same year, Williams shot videotape at Boat Rock and Campbellton Roads, not far from Subber Road, where the body of another victim was found. Williams also had an assignment on Nisky Lake Road, where the bodies of Smith and Evans, the first two victims, were found. The profile also said he probably most likely impersonated law enforcement. A neighbor who said he knew the family for more than 20 years told FBI agents that neighborhood kids thought Williams was a police officer.
Wow.
Because he drove detective-looking cars, carried a badge, and gave orders to kids.
No. My gosh.
Quote, many of them thought he started acting crazy 2 or 3 years ago. He would approach kids in official-looking vehicles, telling them to get off the street or he would lock them up.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
Another neighbor told investigators that Williams threatened to arrest him, showing him some sort of badge. Williams had been arrested by East Point Police in 1976 on a charge of impersonating a police officer.
Everything's lining up.
I know. Wow. Here's another clue, if you want to call it that. When a detective-type car of Williams was repossessed on December 31st, 1979, 1.5 years before he was arrested, officials find a police siren, blue, red, and amber emergency lights, a police scanner, CB unit, and headlight equipped with flashers.
It's not looking good for him.
It's crazy.
The profile also said he would probably be black. Of course, Williams is black. Several acquaintances testified at the trial that Williams had a deep disdain for lower class blacks who he called derogatory names.
Oh my gosh.
I know. Jeez. The profile also said he'd have aggressive behavior. Williams' only prior criminal record, as we mentioned, was for impersonating an officer, unauthorized use of emergency equipment, and filing a false stolen auto report to police. At the time of his arrest on the first two charges, he had a 12-gauge shotgun in his four-door Plymouth. Employees of Southern Ambulance Services, which Williams sometimes visited, testified that Williams liked to scuffle with them, and one employee said that he sometimes sprayed him with mace.
Wow.
He also, according to the report, would favor drab browns. Williams' wardrobe favored drab browns.
Wow. He nailed it.
This Jeez. Profile's insane.
It's crazy.
The profile also said he would be single. Quote, this offender in all probability is single. He has always had difficulty relating to members of the opposite sex. As a youth, he was sexually abused. The odds are high that he has spent time in juvenile detention homes as well as other forms of incarceration. Williams was single, and acquaintances told investigators that Williams was seen rarely with women and had no apparent girlfriend. However, investigators uncovered no evidence that Williams had been sexually abused, nor did he ever spend time in juvenile detention. Two prosecution witnesses testified about Williams' sexuality. One boy said Williams had fondled him. And of course, the one witness said he saw Williams walking down the street holding hands with Cater. Williams denies both accounts. So let's move on to the trial. The trial began on January 6, 1982 in Fulton County. It would only focus on the deaths of Cater and Payne because of the additional hair and fiber evidence. So they're actually two adults, none of the children. The trial would last for 2 months. The prosecution would focus on several key elements, linking sources of fiber from Williams' home, car, and dog to the victims, witness testimony placing Williams with victims while they were alive, and inconsistency in his accounts of his whereabouts. Many of the bodies had the same yellow-green nylon fiber on them, leading investigators to believe that the killings were connected. The fiber was eventually identified as a yarn that was sold to a Georgia carpet company, West Point Pepperell, which used it to make a line called Luxair. I could be saying that wrong. The color of the fibers found in the bodies, including Cater, who was linked to Williams in person, matched Luxair English Olive, the type of carpet found in Williams' home.
Oh, wow.
Jordan, would you ever put English olive carpet in one of our homes?
I love the color olive, but there's nothing from the 70s I'd put in my home.
Yeah, I agree. Experts estimated that one in about 8,000 Atlanta area homes contain this carpet, so not great odds. Prosecutors used this probability along with fiber and hair evidence from Williams' car and dog to establish the narrative that it was an extremely small chance that anyone other than Williams could be the killer. Prosecutors also had FBI profiler Douglas assisting them during the trial, especially with the cross-examination of Williams and other defense witnesses. This is interesting. I didn't realize these profilers assisted during trials either. I thought they were just...
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah, during the catching phase. Here's a quote from Douglas. Wayne Williams, in all probability, thought he would really be enjoying this trial. The personal attention he would be getting is something he has never legitimately obtained. He has made feeble attempts to attain fame by being a disc jockey, ambulance attendant, talent scout, and police officer. All these positions represent power, particularly power over others. Wayne Williams, like many serial killers, never can imagine himself being convicted of his crimes. Serial killers think they are too intelligent to get caught, end quote. Prosecutors were already impressed with Douglas's talent as a profiler, and then they become blown away with this talent when Williams takes the stand and then claims that he's ill and is taken to Grady Memorial Hospital. This is because Douglas, the profiler, had predicted that Williams, upon seeing his own counsel losing ground, might try to feebly attempt suicide to gain sympathy or feign a mental breakdown.
Oh, wow.
So this FBI...
like predicting all this stuff.
He literally predicted that Williams would try to drum up some kind of fake sickness. Mm-hmm. Doctors who examined Williams could find nothing wrong with him.
Wow.
Assessing the trial testimony before Williams took the stand, Douglas observed that Williams had probably been trapped in lies and that witnesses had testified that they had gay experiences with him. Quote, Williams probably does not consider himself a homosexual. However, killer John Gacy of Illinois did not either. Gacy sexually assaulted and killed 33 boys and young men. As the prosecution closes its case, he, for the first time, is concerned. End quote. There was also one other piece of evidence. The killings immediately stopped once Williams was arrested. Wow. After 12 hours of deliberation, the jury found Williams guilty on February 27, 1982, of the murders of Cater and Payne. He was sentenced to life imprisonment. After the verdict, the Atlanta Police Department closed 22 other cases, including the children's deaths, but Williams was never tried or charged for those crimes. Since that time, some theories have arisen that Williams didn't act alone or at all. Some believe, again, that it was the Ku Klux Klan hoping to start a race war. In 2005, an investigation into five of the murders for which Williams was not convicted was reopened. It was closed again in 2006 after police dropped an unpromising probe into the KKK's possible involvement. Though her son's killing was one of the 10 considered a pattern case that authorities directly connected to Williams, Catherine Leach does not believe Williams is the killer. Catherine is the mom who told her son not to go outside and play. Mm-hmm. And she is not alone. Several parents or relatives have said they believe the KKK was responsible for at least some of the murders. According to an August 2005 report, Charles T. Sanders, a white supremacist affiliated with the KKK and an early suspect in the murders, once praised the crimes in secretly recorded conversations. He told an informant for the Georgia Bureau of Investigation in a 1981 recording that the killer had wiped out 1,000 future generations of the N-word, which I'm not going to say.
Jeez.
An anonymous alleged former friend of Sanders told documentarian Payne Lindsay of the Atlanta Monster documentary that Sanders had taken credit for the murders mentioned in a 1986 Spin article, claiming that his brothers were also involved. Sanders did not directly implicate the KKK. He allegedly mused over how lucky he was that he and Williams had the same carpet and they both owned a white German Shepherd.
Oh, no.
Are you kidding?
Wow.
Whoa.
The anonymous former friend went on to say that, quote, once it was pinned on Wayne Williams, they were through. That was their way out, wow. End quote. Police dropped their probe into possible Klan involvement when Sanders and two of his brothers passed lie detector tests. Even FBI profiler Douglas wrote in his book Mindhunter that there's no strong evidence linking Williams to all or even most of the deaths and disappearances of the children in Atlanta between 1979 and 1981.
Wow.
So they stopped investigating them because they passed a lie detector test?
Yeah.
A lot of people do that.
I know.
It's racial.
Yeah. And even Douglas said that the killer probably didn't kill all these people. The convicted right. killer didn't probably kill all these kids. A Department of Justice study released in April 2015 concluded that numerous HERA analysis conducted by FBI examiners during the 1980s and 1990s, quote, may have failed to meet professional standards, end quote. Defense attorney Lynn Whatley immediately announced that the report would form the basis for a new appeal, but prosecutors responded that HERA evidence played only a minor role in Williams' conviction. So here are some new developments. In 2019, Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms announced that investigators would take a fresh look and the city would begin exploring plans for a memorial to the children. For years, a group of parents, led by Catherine Leach, had asked the city to find a permanent way to remember the children. Within days of the news, 50 tips came into a new hotline. 16 were credible enough to go to investigators. Chief Erica Shields said the new investigation began with three questions. Where is all the evidence? How many cases would be reviewed? And from over what period of time? Atlanta police, with assistance from other agencies, will review the cases to determine the condition of the evidence, whether it can be tested or retested, and run through DNA databases. Early on, the team determined that some of the cases were not thoroughly investigated, and the 22 closed cases should have remained active. Mayor Bottoms was 9 years old when the killing started. She remembers her grandparents and aunt begging her mother to send her to Chicago at the time. She remembers waiting at the school bus stop one morning when a car slowly cruised by and suddenly book bags were flying and scattered on the street because all the children were scared. Quote, it was chaos and we all just took off running and kids were crying and everybody was hysterical. It was like there was a boogeyman out there and he was snatching black children, wow. End quote. Bottom stressed that the new investigation is not an attempt to exonerate Williams. She told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that evidence from the 1980s ties Williams to many of the murdered children. Instead, the investigation will use new technology to see if it can uncover any more details from retesting evidence. Retired Atlanta homicide detective Danny Agan believes Williams committed most of the murders. He doesn't view the planned new testing as a jab at the original police work. He said the spirit of the mayor's inquiry was the correct one, to find the truth. Quote, the truth won't hurt you, he said.
Oh, that's good.
Leach Bell, whose son's case is among the five in DeKalb County, praised Atlanta's officials for deciding to check the evidence again. Quote, I am so happy to hear what I've heard today, she said at the time. It's brought a little comfort in my heart. I have been let down for many, 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 many years, end quote. Wow. Williams, now 62, he's the convicted killer, reportedly sends families of the victims Christmas cards and letters declaring his innocence.
Oh my gosh, dude, no.
I know. The task force is also still at work on a permanent memorial. The planned memorial will include an eternal flame and a still-to-be-determined artwork honoring the victims' lives. And the memorial will be installed at City Hall. Sheila Baltazar, she's on the Memorial Task Force. I came across in all this research, I found a story where she said that she wishes producers of shows about this case would contact her.
Uh-huh.
So I actually tried to contact her. I sent an email to the City of Atlanta press secretary just saying I came across this quote. So I felt like I needed to
do my best to
contact her. I looked on Facebook and Instagram. I couldn't find her. So I sent him an email just saying I thought I'd give it a chance, sent my my email and phone number to him. I didn't hear back. I didn't expect to. I'm sure they get a lot of these kind of comments, but I thought it was only fair to give her a chance. If I hear back, for sure, we'll do a follow-up.
Definitely, 100%.
But that's why I didn't, I just, calling it the Atlanta Child Murders, I don't think does it the full scope.
I guess because, I mean, that's what was happening was all these kids were being taken and murdered, but what was put on trial with him were the two adults.
Right.
So it's, yeah, it's kind of confusing.
Yeah. I think most officials believe he probably did kill some of the kids
as well. At least, yeah.
But not all of them, it feels like.
Yeah.
So it's a very complicated case.
Yeah, totally.
Man. I feel like that's my personal view too. He did some, but not all.
Yeah, it could have definitely been. Honestly, it really could have been the KKK. And then, you know, he was also operating on his own, totally separate from each other. But just maybe even the KKK taking advantage of the situation that they saw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To try to use that for more evil.
But, yeah. And then Mindhunter 2, it's kind of similar how once they arrest Williams, they're kind of, I think it's the Atlanta Police Department's like, okay, well, we're going to close these other cases. And the moms are begging the FBI not to leave. And they're like, well, there's not much we can do now.
It's heartbreaking.
So I don't know how truthful that is, but it sounds like there's probably some truth to that as well.
Definitely. Especially with Mrs. Bell's quote about many, 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 you know, like,
I kept all those many's in there because she said that many for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
You can almost feel the pain in her voice when she said that.
I have the wild story this week, and I'm going to be talking about something called Choreomania.
Never heard it.
Is it like for Clorox fans?
Nope.
This is the real Dance Dance Revolution.
Pretty much. I think dancing can definitely be contagious, especially when a great song is on.
What do you mean?
It's easy to get with the groove.
What do you mean?
Chad and I love to dance.
Oh, you guys have the best dance faces.
Yeah, we have the same dance. It's very serious.
We're the same person. We've went over this.
Except you have a hoochie.
Oh my God, that's okay. That's the third time Hoochie's been brought up
today.
Yes,
really?
I started talking about Hoochie and sex sent me to the ER. Yeah. Then you talked about Chattahoochee.
I knew you were gonna say
and
Chattahoochee River, again.
Way down yonder on the Chattahoochee.
This is the name of the podcast today, Hoochie.
Last week was Beaver. This week is Hoochie.
Beaver.
And it's funny, it's the two gay guys talking about it.
It is funny.
We're more than just gay guys. We are beings on this earth.
Beings.
Are you sure? Are you an alien?
I could be.
You never know. Choreomania takes the idea of, you know, catching the dancing fever to the next level.
Wait, is your star really on dancing?
Yes.
I'm so excited.
Choreomania. Yeah. Choreo.
Well, I thought it was about like people who like chlorine or something in swimming pools. Movie stars.
Choreomania, also known as dancing mania or the dancing plague. Yeah.
I want this disease. I think I have this disease, actually.
It's debated to be caused by everything from a curse to a disease or a mental disorder dating back to the 7th century and abruptly ending in the 17th century.
It's not a curse. It's a blessing.
We'll find. Yeah.
It's a blessing. Have you
Hashtag
seen me?
Blessed.
Have you seen me post 12:01 a.m. at the bar?
Oh, I've seen you. Yeah,
it is a curse. Well, it is.
It's
curse
a blessing
for people watching.
It's a blessing for us.
It is a blessing, Chad.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, you know, I can't say that because we're usually both out there together.
That's true.
We both out there.
You provide me with endless entertainment, and I love it.
Wait, is that coming from a place of love?
Yes, 100%.
I'm gonna go back to my White Claw. Carry on.
In simplest terms, choreomania is an outbreak of compulsive dancing, usually starting.
Did you do the story for Courtney and I?
I just picturing this in my head. I'm like, yes. Okay.
It usually starts with one person and grows into the hundreds. What? Lasting hours, days, weeks, and even months.
My thighs would start to hurt.
Yeah.
Talk about a party.
Too much booty shaking.
The dancers danced freely, often seeming to be unable to control themselves or even seeming to be in a trance-like state.
What is happening?
Dance, just dance.
Author Robert Bartholomew says that some people, quote, paraded around naked. Some made obscene gestures. Some had intercourse.
Oh, wow.
What is intercourse? Is it like a meal? Like they had like an appetizer?
In opposite of outer course.
Oh, okay. Like an innie?
Some people acted like animals.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Some jumped, hopped, and leaped about.
What are they, leprechauns? What is going on? Was this in Ireland?
This was in Europe. This was mostly Germany, France, that area. So the dancing would continue, even though the dancers were clearly becoming in pain. Some would dance until they broke a rib, which would actually kill them.
Yeah, right in the heart.
Whoa.
Yeah, seriously. I'm a doctor.
You are?
Well, no, but I know Caleb. He's a doctor.
You know Dr.
Yeah.
Caleb?
Yeah, he's a doctor. I've been to a doctor.
Yeah. Oh, that counts. That qualifies.
Not this year, though. Yeah.
I had a doctor's appointment over the computer.
I have, too. Are they weird?
I love it. I prefer it.
I do, too,
it.
Kind of. No, I like human contact.
I am such an introvert. I'm like, hey,
you are.
I'll catch you online.
Yeah. In like 2025, when all this is over with, you're like,
I'll stick with the computer.
I'll see you at my house.
Look at her. She's cross-eyed.
Oh, are there pictures I'm supposed to be looking at?
So I found some paintings from the time.
Paintings?
Yes, depicting different dancing mania scenes.
It's like we were talking about last week about how porn was paintings.
Yeah. Oh my God, I laughed when I heard
that. Guy looks like Gollum.
He's under a trance. He's he's dancing it out.
Look at this one.
Why is there a rooster in this one?
Why their heads are always like turned backwards?
Look at his dingling.
Dingling? Where? Where's the dingling? I want to see the dingling.
Look, right there, front and center.
Oh, sizable.
Oh, look at this one. Oh my God. No. Okay.
No.
Moving
on. Hold on.
On.
Can I say something? Can I say something really quick? That the dingling guy.
Oh
no, he did the painting. That's not real.
That's a self-portrait.
Yeah, that's a self-portrait.
Oh, look at this one.
This guy has a boner.
Okay. Let's move on from the paintings.
You guys aren't even drinking.
I know. Dancers would scream, laugh, cry.
Yeah, they would when they saw that dingling.
Jeez.
They would laugh, cry, or sing, and some reports say they would become violent if they saw the color red.
What is happening?
They also reportedly hated pointed shoes.
I fucking hate pointed shoes.
Witches.
You show me a pointed shoe and I will kill you.
I love a pointed shoe.
Who are these people? I kind of like them.
Beyond exhaustion, the dancers would get chest pains, have hallucinations, convulsions, visions, hyperventilate, or have epileptic fits. While most ended their choreomania experience in extreme pain and sometimes death, others would describe that they found themselves in a state of ecstasy.
Wait a second. Are you describing me?
Sounds about
right.
I think
they're just at Burning Man. I think this
they're
is
at Coachella.
It's Coachella.
Pre-Coachella.
Wait, is this a intervention for me? Is that why the door's closed over there?
Yes, the door's locked.
Okay, fine. See what story I do
I'm
next
on
week,
your
Bethany.
Side, Chad.
Thank you, Courtney.
Chad.
Apparently you're on Ched's side, whoever that is.
Because no one knew what was causing the choreomania, the attempts at a cure were also all over the place and basically just guesses. Sometimes the dancers would be isolated. Some would have exorcisms performed. Some would pray or make a pilgrimage to a sacred site dedicated to Saint Vitus or Vetus. I'm not sure how you say that.
I'm your Vitus. I'm your Vetus. Your
Vitus.
Venus.
Oh my God. Talking about hoochies and dinglings.
That's the name of the episode.
Welcome to
hoochies
Wild
and dinglings.
555 Wild.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Contact our attorney.
No, we fired them.
Wild. No, we did not.
We doubled them.
The towns would also have musicians play music, thinking that the music would be a treatment for the dancing, But all this really did was encourage more people to dance.
You know what? They're dancing. How about we put some good jams on? I think that will make them stop dancing.
I mean, logical.
Again, we've talked about this early on in this podcast. Any of us here could have been a doctor.
Oh,
pre-1900.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Top notch. In 1278, around 200 people danced their
way. Hell of a year.
Hell of a
great year.
What a year. What a year. Around 200. What are you doing?
They're showing
There's
each other.
Another pop. Boner.
Still?
I can't, we're playing Spot the Boner over here in the second painting.
It's like, where's Waldo? But it's where's
Listen,
the boner?
Bethany's trying
these
to tell
These two are
Mackin.
Look at these two.
Oh, Mackin.
Yeah. Mackin, hardcore. The red hat and the white.
If you want to know what they're talking about, go look at the pictures on our website.
I challenge everybody, go look at the second painting and tell us what you think, what modern day song they're dancing to.
Oh, I like that.
This is how we do it. Okay.
Let's talk about sex, baby.
If you two Ponca-Cityans would just calm down. Bethany's trying to tell a story.
Okay let's get back to it. In 12...
This is how...
Chad, you scared me.
Oh, Chad, I love you. In 1278, around 200 people danced their way to a bridge that crosses the river Meuse. I'm sorry, Germany.
Wow, way to do your research.
I'm sorry, Germany. The weight of the group and their dancing caused the bridge to collapse. Those who survived were treated at a nearby chapel, which just so happened to be dedicated to St. Vitus. St. Vitus is considered the patron saint of dancers, among other things.
Wait, what? How many patron saints are there?
There's a lot. And basically, there's a patron saint for everything.
Can I be the patron saint of White Claw?
Yes.
I feel like there's an opportunity
there. I nominate
there.
You for
it's
that.
It's the 21st century.
I don't know how to do that, but we'll call the Pope and ask. Because of this, some people refer to choreomania as St. Vitus dance. Back then, several people believed the dancing mania was either a curse from St. Vitus or a curse that only St. Vitus could cure. Mm-hmm. In Aachen, Germany, on June 24th, 1374, dancers would hold hands and dance for hours until they would eventually fall in exhaustion. The city thought the dancers were possessed, so exorcists threw holy water on them.
They're doing flash dance over here.
Wait, are we in Germany?
Yes.
Okay, that was like an Irish thing I just did. I apologize.
In Schaffhausen, Switzerland, a monk danced himself to death in 1428. In July 1518, a woman named Frau Trophia started dancing in the streets of Strasbourg. She was dancing for hours, then on the second day continued dancing even though her feet were bleeding and bruised. In less than a month, 400 people had joined in on the dancing. The city rulers thought the dancing was being caused by, quote, overheated blood, and that the people just needed to dance it out.
Oh, I figured Jeez. It out. I know what's going on.
Oh.
Meth. This is the first meth ever in the world, isn't it?
Are they in Oklahoma? Yeah.
They were in Germany, also known as early Oklahoma.
The city provided halls for them to dance in and even hired musicians to play. Again, unfortunately, all this did was encourage more people to join in the dancing. Dancers with weak hearts began to die within days. It was summer, so it was very hot, and as many as 15 people a day would die.
Jeez.
Yeah. Eventually, the dancers were put in wagons and taken to a healing shrine of St. Vitus. They put red shoes on the dancers and led them around a wooden figure of St. Vitus, and by early September, the dancing mania had finally ended.
Oh, I didn't want it to end.
I mean, just in that town.
I wanted to look outside and see like a Congo line going out the window.
We should start bring this back.
Can you imagine like the obituary for this kind of shit?
Oh my God.
She died from dancing.
Danced to death.
Yeah.
I want to dance to death. I want that.
I think that's a good way to go.
I decided I want to die dancing.
I like it.
I think some nights I've been pretty close.
You know, they say dance like no one's watching, you know?
I was just about to say
Lisa
that.
Lisa Rinna says dance like everyone's watching.
Well, I'm going with James Dean over Lisa Rinna. Okay.
I would like to hang out with both of them, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Fair.
James Dean's Agreed. A hottie and Lisa Rinna is, well, she's a hottie too, but she'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm sure. In 1526, Paracelsus, a Swiss physician, alchemist, and philosopher, went to Strasbourg to try and figure out what had happened in 1518. He essentially blamed the dancing mania on women, claiming Frau Trophia started the dancing because she didn't want to do the tasks her husband ordered her to do.
Oh, okay.
I agree with him.
Shut up. No. False.
Which one is he in these pictures?
The red hat.
This one.
Oh, yeah, because he's such a ladies' man. No wonder he's blaming the women. He's like, what's on the menu? That's literally what he's thinking in that picture. Jesus.
To this day, it's not known if choreomania was an actual illness or some kind of social phenomenon. There are many theories, but none of them can explain every aspect of what was going on in a choreomania outbreak. So let's get into the theories. When there's a flood or it's an especially wet season, fungus, known as ergo, can grow and affect rye crops. Some people believe this is what was happening because ergo poisoning can cause hallucinations, delusions, and convulsions.
No. Next.
Next.
Ergo next.
Ergo.
You get it?
I got it.
Thank you.
This is an interesting...
Courtney doesn't get it.
This is an interesting theory, but not all of the dancing mania outbreaks happened in wet seasons or in communities that ate rye.
Mm-hmm.
It also doesn't explain the outbreaks that consisted of mostly coordinated movement.
Yeah, I was going to say it was about the coordinated movements.
We have some choreography going on.
They were flash dancers.
I mean, it's like, like how the dance mobs was a thing like 5 years ago.
Oh, God.
Another theory is that the dancers were actually experiencing epilepsy.
Nope. Wrong.
Epileptic seizures can be brief or long and include vigorous shaking, but epilepsy is not contagious.
Jordan, try to say that word.
Epilepsy?
Oh,
no, the other one.
Epileptic.
Yeah, you can't say it. You can't say it.
Epileptic.
Oh.
There you go. I did it. I said it.
Wow.
The third theory is that the dances were all staged. It may have been religious cults performing band rituals under the guise of dancing mania. This, however, doesn't account for the dancers who were in pain and expressing their need for help to end the dancing.
Can I just say, after the events of January 6th, that one is a possibility.
Well, wait till you hear the next one.
They were mad over an election. No?
Not an election, but listen. The fourth theory is that it was caused by, quote, shared stress or mass hysteria. There were many plagues, natural disasters, famines, and rampant poverty through the decades, any of which could cause psychological distress. Some think this led to the dancing outbreaks, almost like experiencing a shared mental breakdown, but in the form of dancing.
Can people practice that today?
I mean, I wish that's how we got our stress out.
Can we choose to just dance it out?
Dance it out.
I have a feeling, since we're recording this episode on a Saturday instead of a Sunday,
we're going to be dancing
it. We might be dancing it out in a few hours.
Journalist John Waller talks about how many dancers were described as being in a trance state, which allowed them to dance as long as they did. He argues that trance states are more likely to occur in people who are under extreme psychological distress. In an article he wrote for the BBC, he says, quote, "The city's poor were suffering from severe famine and disease, and crucially, we also know they believed in a saint called Saint Vitus, who had the power to take over their mind and inflict a terrible compulsive dance. Once these highly vulnerable people began to anticipate the Saint Vitus curse, they increased the likelihood that they'd enter the trance state. And once in it, they acted out the part of the accursed, dancing wildly for days at a time. So the epidemic, I argue, was a result of both desperation and pious fear. The dancing plague died out because the supernaturalist beliefs that fed it gradually disappeared. Fervent supernaturalism of the medieval world had to make way for the rise of modern science and rationality. Even so, half a millennium later, it still serves as a reminder of the ineffable strangeness of the human brain."
Mm.
Whatever the cause, it's also widely thought that several participants were simply taking part because they wanted to copy the larger group. And that is the story of choreomania.
I think there could be something to it.
I think it was their health. Back then, they ate like shit. They barely bathed. I mean...
They did.
I mean, like, let's just dance it out.
Yeah.
I will say, listen to this, though. Think about it. If you're at a bar and the dance floor is empty, nobody wants to go out there.
No.
And then, like, suddenly when the people are out there and you... I'm going to go with this. Drugs were involved. And so I think there's something psychological going on.
I buy the shared stress theory.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Also meth is what I think.
They were just grinding whatever they could find, and they were grinding the rye.
Sexual frustration. Because it took so long for them to take off their clothes.
Seriously, yeah, they had like though. 8 layers they had to untie. They had to cut sometimes.
Suppressed people in many ways.
Yeah.
I had never heard of choreomania before, and I thought it was fascinating.
I kind
of
want it.
I mean, I don't want to die.
No, I don't want my rib going through my heart or anything like
but
that.
But I think we could dance in the streets for a while.
Let's go do it right now.
Let's do it.
Our neighbors still. Across the street just got home, and let's just do it and see if they follow
us. See if they join in.
Yeah.
A flash mob cute. Of 4 people.
The neighbor's kind of cute. Let's see if he joins in.
Chad, again, you think everyone is freaking cute. Do you think I'm cute?
Girl, you're gorgeous.
Girl.
What are you doing later? Ben, don't worry about it. We're just friends.
Don't worry about it.
So this never, did this ever happen again?
Not since the 17th century.
So don't, when that theory though, wouldn't it pop up again?
I think what he's saying is like, you know, modern, rationality okay, and modern, yeah. modern sciences. And I mean, I buy it. I deal with anxiety and I have panic attacks. And so I can
you dance it out if you didn't have that those meds, you know?
I'm really nervous.
Give me my Xanax.
But I know how strong the mind can be. You know, if you want to believe something, you can believe something.
Yeah, so. I agree with that.
Yeah, so I think that that's kind of what was going on. I think it's more in the mass hysteria realm of things, for sure.
Yeah, that's a good wild story.
I know, I thought that. It was good.
Very interesting.
I love good historical stories like that. Me because too. There's no right or wrong answer.
I know,
but it's a mystery. God, I hope there's another dance-off coming soon. I'm hoping 2021
people are in the streets dancing.
I mean, if that's how we could try to solve our problems or our issues or,
let's all just,
you know,
go out into the streets
just
and start dancing.
My favorite Motown song of all time is Dancing in the Streets. So that would be terrific. Yeah.
That is a good song. That's a good song. Thanks for listening this week, you guys. Head over to our website, wildsocietypodcast.com, to see pictures from today's episode. Wherever you're listening, be sure to hit follow or subscribe so you'll receive each week's new episode automatically. We love you. You've been running in our mind whole day.
And just dance. It'll be okay.
Don't burn your hoochie.
Bye.